Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Health Wealth Podcast. We've got another great episode for you this week. I recently recorded a podcast with Richard Smith, otherwise known as the Keto Pro, where we tore into the blue zones and basically bust all of the myths in that and went into some detail about all the longevity hacks and things that come from the blue zones. So I thought it'd be a great idea to also share it on my own podcast as well as his. So we're going to do that this week. And there's a ton of information there, which I'm sure you're going to find very, very interesting. So let's jump on in.
Hello, health seekers. Welcome to another episode of the Keto Pro Podcast with myself, Richard Smith. Today, I am joined with Ryan Douglas. Ryan is the owner of Health Wealth. He helps people with chronic illness and disease, helps them with nutrition and health and well-being. Ryan, welcome on board.
Hi, Rich. How are you doing? Really happy to be here.
Fantastic. Excited. This has been booked in for quite some time. And I think today we are going to be discussing some blue zones. Before we get into that, do you want to tell the listeners a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. So, I mean, Health Wealth is, that's the coaching business and the podcast that I have. Our main aim, especially with the podcast, is just to educate people, because I think, you know, I found on my journey, and I'm sure most people do, that you have to just relearn everything. Everything we're taught is wrong and you have to start over. So with the podcast, we're just trying to educate people and start to open their eyes to the truth about nutrition and health and things like that, which obviously is, as we know, very different to what we're taught. And then with the coaching, then I started alongside it as well, which is just working one-to-one with people. People who are like seriously ill, you know, have serious chronic conditions and really need that help. You know, for people who are in reasonable health, they can probably pick up bits here and there and do it themselves. But looking to really help people where they have no hope. You know, there's people where they're just told by the doctors, this is you for the rest of your life. This is you. Take your medication. It's probably going to get gradually worse and they've got no hope. That's the kind of people that looking to help. To do that. And that's pretty much what we do.
People like me then. That was me before I started my journey. I was clinically obese, type 2 diabetic, and I was told that it was a fact of life.
Yeah.
I was going to be on meds for the rest of my days and just to put up with it. I'm completely med-free. So I'm 40. This was in my mid to late 20s. So while this is 11, 12 years ago. I'm half the size, quite literally, 107 pound down, reverse diabetes. I'm the fittest and healthiest that I've ever been. I went on to become British and European champion at a professional level in bodybuilding. And now I'm competing in running and cycling or duathlon. I will be competing in triathlon soon, but I still can't swim. So I've still got that one to learn. But until the beginning of last year, I couldn't run or ride a bike. So, you know, we're not doing too bad.
No, making progress.
Awesome stuff. Let's get into this. The Blue Zones. This is the bane of my life lately. There's a channel that you may all be familiar with, a very popular channel, which many may not be familiar with this part, but is mostly owned by vegans. Or they have big vegan ties. I don't know if you knew that as well, but yeah. So I think sometimes the information that these channels put out, we need to take with a pinch of salt. But when I first heard about the blue zones, you know, the information is quite striking. And you and I, Ryan, we don't just have an agenda that we stick to. I think you were probably the same as me in regards to, I'm in pursuit of optimal health and well-being. And I live a ketogenic or carnivore lifestyle. I'm relatively strict in regards to what most people would class as a diet. I don't find it restrictive. I love the food that I eat, but I've gravitated down that path through lots and lots of research. And I've experimented many times with fruits and vegetables and different sources of carb, putting carb in at different times for many different reasons. Because I believe that they conferred a benefit. I truly believe that vegetables were incredibly nutrient dense and contained all of these magical compounds that we are led to believe that they contain. And when I began my journey, my ketogenic journey, I was predominantly vegetable based. So my diet was more vegetables than protein. The protein made up a very small portion of my plate. Yes, I still had it in, but I was making my kale and spinach smoothies with turmeric and black pepper every day, and I felt amazing. Way better than I'd ever felt prior to that. But through laziness, I stopped cooking vegetables and just ate meat for probably the better part of 6 months, because boiling eggs and frying a steak is so easy. Steak or beef is the original fast food, isn't it? I don't think there's anything else that can cook quicker than a piece of steak, especially the way that I like it. So through, I keep saying laziness, but it's been busy, you know, but we're all busy. So I ate animal proteins, beef, eggs, cheese, maybe, and other meats as well, predominantly for 6 months. And I felt better than I'd ever felt before. And this led me down the journey of investigating the nutrients in food, in vegetables, the vitamins and minerals, and looking into all of these so-called magical compounds that exist within. And I was shocked, because every plant on the planet is poisonous to a varying degree. Yes, we can consume some, but they all contain toxic compounds. So I removed them. I kept them out. I experimented continuously, and I still experiment. So I still experiment with carbohydrate. Because for me, if I can improve my health and well-being, I said to a friend of mine recently, if there was a research paper that said spinning around on 1 foot three times and touching the ground before running a race is going to improve your athletic performance because of A, B, C, and D, and all of this was heavily documented, I would be doing that before every race. So I'm open to suggestion. And that's what I find the vegan community tend not to be. And this isn't a stab at the vegans or vegetarians by any means. I mean, I was predominantly vegetable-based, but it's many people from that side of the argument, they won't take a step back and look at the bigger picture. They won't look at the evidence. Now, I've got a business, Keto Pro, so people think that I'm wedded to this lifestyle. But the fact of the matter is, if I was to say to somebody, living a ketogenic or carnivore-based lifestyle long-term is bad for you, but it confers a massive benefit if you cycle it every few months, that would be an easier sell than telling people that living this way is the creme de la creme. I would probably double my business in you know, by telling people this. I don't tell people that because it's not true. You know, and this is the difference between you and I. We are truth seekers, and we look for the evidence. So when I first discovered the Blue Zones, I began to look into it quite deeply. You didn't even have to look very deep, I'll be honest. And we'll go through some of this as well. But for the listeners, I've written down a little brief description of what the Blue Zones are. So the idea of the Blue Zones didn't exist before 2005. It was invented by Dan Buettner, a journalist who coined the term the Blue Zones. And it was since been trademarked and I think sold, and you may know more about this, been sold to the Seventh-day Adventists of America, who are a religious group who advocate for a vegan-based lifestyle. I'm not against that. You know, I own a brand, Keto Pro, and I believe in it. So if somebody wants to own a brand because they believe in it, then that's fine. I'm not against that at all. But basically, the premise behind the Blue Zones is that these five locations within the world, which off the top of my head contain Sardinia, which is in Italy, Icaria in Greece, Loma Linda in California, Okinawa in Japan, and Costa Rica, I think, is it? Somewhere in Costa Rica, I'm sure you will know. And basically, the people living within these locations have the highest rate of centurions. They live the longest within the world. And it's said that their diet is predominantly, or if not exclusively, vegetable-based. So let's break this down. What can you add to that, right?
Yes. Yeah. I think there's actually, more than, there's now more than five. I think five was the original amount of Blue Zones, but I think there's more now because, you know, like you said about they've patented it or whatever, but yeah, you actually can apply, places can apply to be part of it. So it's not given out on merit. You can apply to become a Blue Zone, and it's seen as like a market. I don't know if they have to pay. They probably have to pay as well to see it. So yeah, a marketing push. And same as you, you know, when I first heard about it and you hear people talk about it, it sounds great. But yeah, like you said, it's not even hard once you dig into it. And I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure that Dan Butner, whatever his name is, who originally wrote it, I don't think he ever physically visited any of the places. But I could be wrong, but I don't think he actually went there. He just used data and questionnaires for it. I don't think he ever actually went and stayed with the people in the areas. So that's already a pretty bad footing to go off.
Yeah, that's not a good start. That's not a good start.
So what else can you add to that before? And I think if you've got anything else to add, we can, we'll get into that. And then we can look at these places individually, possibly working backwards from the lowest to the highest for me, because I think the last place that I wanted to mention is the most striking. But what else has your research uncovered, right?
Yes. Yeah, so, I mean, one of the things that came out about the Blue Zones as well is that they're not actually as long-lived as was originally made out. So that, you know, a lot of the places didn't have great birth and death certifications. And once that was kind of introduced, I think in most places, the amount of centenarians halved, I think. So they're not, I mean, there are benefits to them, which I'm sure we'll discuss some of the things they have, but they're not actually as amazingly long-lived as was kind of first painted out by it.
Yeah, which is shocking. Yeah.
Okay, which order do you want to do this in? Right, I was thinking of maybe looking at Ikaria. I mean, Loma Linda is the hub, isn't it, of the Seventh-day Adventists of America. You know, they are against, in fact, I think all of the other regions contain or consume, without bursting the bubble, but we will get to this, they all consume, you know, X amount of meat, let's say, from beef and pork, with the exception of Loma Linda. But what I would argue there is also a good social network is very important. Weather and sunshine is also very important. Lifestyle in general, lack of stress. There's lots of contributing factors, isn't there, to health and well-being. And I'm not saying you can't live a lifestyle eating, you know, vegetables. I just don't think it's optimal. And I think it could be dangerous if you consume more of the toxic compounds than others. I mean, some are less toxic than others. But have you got any information on Loma Linda, or do you want to move on to Ikaria?
Yeah, no, we can talk about that one quickly. It's, I mean, with Loma Linda, like you said, lifestyle is a huge part. That crops up in every single Blue Zone. When we talk about the benefits, lifestyle is a huge thing, community. And, you know, they're going to be in as well. Again, we don't want to give away everything, the benefits they've got. But, you know, again, with Loma Linda, they're not going to be eating as processed and rubbish a diet as most people are. They're eating cleaner, just not animal foods. But even that's not completely true. So, in surveys done, only about 8-10% of the Seventh-day Adventists actually stick to the no meat part of the their belief or origin. So really? The majority of them are actually eating some, probably not loads, but the majority of them are actually eating some. It's one of those things where, you know, the really strict religious ones probably have no meat at all, but most of them actually do still eat it. So you know, it's again, it's
bombshell. Kind
of, they're saying fully plant-based, but you know, they're not fully plant-based. It's another one of those things. And as you say, the lifestyle plays a huge part there. So you have to take that into account, and the fact that they're not actually fully plant-based. And I think one of the things as well, I think it might be Dr. Chafee who's talked about this, that down the road, not that far from Loma Linda, there's also what are they now? They're another kind of version of the, they're not Seventh-day Adventist. There's something else, but they do eat meat, but they have a similar community, similar lifestyle, and they live to a similar age, but they eat plenty of meat. I can't now remember what kind of sect or thing they are. But it's not the plant-based that's doing it. It's more their lifestyle.
Yeah. And the area, obviously, yes. You know?
But that's it, yeah.
So what type of meats, when you say that there's a percentage who are not sticking to fully plant-based, what type of meats do you think that they're eating? Is it, you know, do you think it's fish and chicken, poultry, or do you think there is red meat going in there potentially?
I'm not too sure. It didn't really ask what it was. It just said that only 8-10% were strict with the no animal products. So the rest of them would be in, you know, some meat. So eggs probably, I mean, you get a lot of them, you know, even with like vegetarians, they still have eggs, don't they? Because they know they need that. It's only the vegans that try and go that extreme with nothing. So yeah, unfortunately, it didn't actually say the specific meats they ate, but I would imagine a decent range of things.
Yeah, that's a low percentage, mind, isn't it? 8 to 10%. Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, that's not the predominator, is it, by any
means? No. It's not the majority.
Shocking. Okay. Let's move on to location number two then. So let's have a look at Ikaria. What information have you got on Ikaria? I've got some bits here to show, but let's go through yours. Let's go through what you have there.
Yeah, so Ikaria is a good one. I've been watching some stuff on this one recently of people who actually go there. So one of the really interesting things with Ikaria is, if you actually go back and you look at the questionnaires that were given to them, what they based all this off. So it wasn't, they didn't ask them, oh, what do you eat in a day, and fill it out. It was a questionnaire where it had options. You know, you can select, do you eat this or do you not eat this?
Really?
And it had no mention of dairy and no mention of goat, pork, chicken, things that actually, the only meat it mentioned was beef, which they don't eat there because they don't have beef there. So they obviously put no for that. But they eat loads of dairy, loads of other meats, which weren't on the questionnaire. So on the questionnaire, they appeared quite plant-based, but in actual real life, they're not.
Yeah, interesting you should say that. I'm going to share my screen. Yeah, so you can see the goats.
Yeah, yeah.
No beef, but there's goats there. So what it does say on this is, there was some seafood, but we were told by the Ikarian family that it was dangerous and difficult to fish. So, okay, not eating an awful lot of fish until recently, but it goes on to say, so the seafood is a more recent option. However, meat was always eaten.
Mm-hmm.
Meat was always eaten in black and white. We were told in the past meat may not have been eaten every day, but it was still consumed often and in big portions. And then if we scroll down, so this is a traditional dish, the meats and things that they're eating there, and then the dairy. So this is a product available, which is cheese, and then we've got butter. So there's two animal-based products there, plus local families admitting that they are, in fact, eating big portions of meat. So, I mean, that's zone number two. Pretty easily taken out and debunked. And I'm shocked because looking at this information, it didn't take me long to find these pieces. And you just found that questionnaire, which is incredible. I mean, that is pure market manipulation, isn't it? You know, how can someone fill a box or tick a box that isn't on that piece of paper? It's, it's shocking. Yeah, we really enjoyed I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right, but I Ikarian, how are you pronouncing that, right?
Ikaria, but that's just Ikaria. I've heard other people pronouncing it. So, I mean, sounds, we could all be wrong.
It sounds good to me. So the Ikarian goat meat and its flavor, though we met Ikarians that didn't like it, but still ate other kinds of meat. So, I mean, you know, this is off... And there's lots of other bits on you. The title for this is The Truth on Ikaria Blue Zone Diet in Greece, and that is available online. And I'll put the link to that in. And there's lots of really good videos in there as well, which show how they use the lard and all sorts for cooking and stuff in there. We'll pop that in the link below. So, I mean, right, quite easily, you know, we've taken down two of those zones already. Have you got anything to add to that one before we move on to Sardinia?
No, I think that's fine. That one it's again, it's a really good one to watch. Is Mary Ruddick? She's got some stuff in it because I think she was in Greece for a while. And I'm actually going to do a podcast on it coming up soon because my podcast co-host is Greek origin, Barry, and he's seen some stuff about it. And you know, if you know Greek people, they love eating meat. You know, it's a huge part of what they eat. So we're actually gonna kind of do one on it and tear it apart there. And I mean, a lot of the vegetables as well that we think of as traditionally Greek are not. They've only been there very recent times, like tomatoes and things like that, which people think are a huge part. They've only been there for say 40, 50 years. They're not a traditional food from that area.
Yeah,
Shocking. I look forward to seeing that.
So Sardinia, what have you got me on for me on Sardinia?
So Sardinia, I think, is very similar to Icaria in that they only asked them for certain foods and certain questions again, which made them able to manipulate it. And a really interesting one for Sardinia is that they said on the questionnaire that they only eat meat about once a week. And if you go to Sardinia and you actually go and see the people in these places and who are living traditionally, they will tell you that they only eat meat once a week. But to them, eating meat is where they have this massive barbecue of all these foods and they have all the family around and eat all this meat. That's eating meat to them. But then every day they actually eat meat with every meal as well. But they just don't class that as eating meat because it's just what they do every day. So they answered what they thought was honestly on the questionnaire. And then it was taken as you eat meat once a week. But really what they meant was they have a big gathering and eating meat. And that's easy to find out again by just going and watching videos of the experience of people who've actually been there.
Yeah, that's shocking. And that sounds quite like the last place that I want to go to on this, but we'll save that because that sounds quite similar to tradition of another location. I'm going to share my screen. So this is Sardinian diet analysis for longevity review of the literature. So it says there, due to the island's isolation, the genetic traits of Sardinian people have shown that they are direct descendants of their ancestors. So to survive during times of food and scarcity, many famine foods were created. So acorn bread, okay, that's not meat, containing clay, yeah, okay. Cheese, all right. Well, cheese sounds quite animal-based to me. Soft cheese with worms, which to me sounds animal-based, or at least there's certainly, traces of cheese to me is one of the most nutrient-dense compounds on the planet in regards to, I know we live a stricter lifestyle, but cheese is pretty close to a protein ratio in regards to protein and fat, similar fat ratios and similar amino profile to proteins because it comes from animals. The only downside to things like cheese potentially is maybe the casein and the lactose, so on and so forth. But I still use cheese in my diet because I find it works incredibly well for me. Once your gut is healed, we can deal with this intestinal permeability potentially caused by casein because the gut no longer suffers with that permeability. But cheese to me is an animal food. I know some people would class it as dairy, but milk and cheese to me are animal-based compounds. So, I mean, that it is in black and white. They do consume. And in fact, there's not within that list, I mean, what's there? We've got bread, acorn bread. I mean, that's not even a vegetable. So, I mean, there's probably more animal compounds within that list there than there is anything else. So, I mean, basically, that's location. What's that location number three? Quite easily debunked. And all of this information is easy to find. You don't have to dig very far for it. Okay, let's go on to, where are we on the list? Costa Rica. So what have you got for us on Costa Rica or Nicoya?
So this is one of the ones I know the least about this one, but it's, again, you have to look at their lifestyle, the amount of sunlight they're getting, and the fact that where they eat, they might eat a good amount of fruit and things like that. They eat it seasonal for them, which is all year round and very local, they do consume animal foods as well. I believe their fish is a good part of that as well. But this is the one I have the least knowledge on. So you might be better to give more info on this one.
So I've got a few bits on this, actually. So this is quite interesting. So this is a study looking at the longevity of the island for elderly males. Now, there's a few things with this. So if we read that abstract, it goes on to say, for a 60-year-old Nicoyan male, the probability of becoming a centenarian is 7 times that of the Japanese male. And in fact, the longevity of their population is predominantly male-driven. So the females do not benefit from this. And when you look into the male diet, they do eat lots of meat cooked in animal fats. And in fact, it even says this a bit further down the line. So it goes on to say that two markers of aging and stress telomere length and DHEAS are more favorable in the Nicoyan diet and are abundant in traditional foods like rice, okay, so they're eating rice, beans, and animal protein. And it's there in black and white. And the interesting thing with this, so I mean, you've got two aging markers with this. We've got the telomere length and DHEAS. DHEA and DHAS, this paper argues that increase in protein in the diet over the course of human evolution not only increased levels of DHEAS, but linked meat consumption with brain development. It goes on to say that DHEA and DHEAS are directly linked with consuming animal proteins, which is exactly what this paper is saying as far as the DHEAS goes. So the two markers of aging. And the other is telomere length. Unexpected effect of red meat. Not for us.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Is it really that unexpected? So after analysis obtained, data was found that only, and I'm going to re-highlight this in blue, only red meat consumption was associated with relative length of the telomere. That's one paper. In fact, there's only one compound on the planet which has ever been shown to increase the telomere length. So for those listening and watching who don't know what the telomeres are like caps on the end of the chromosomes on the DNA. And every time the cell replicates, the telomere is shortened. And that's directly linked with longevity. So the more that these telomeres are shortened, you know, the closer we are to end of life. One compound on the planet has ever been shown to increase telomere length. And I found two papers to support this, and that is red meat. Red meat is the only compound. And again, if I share this one, higher intake of red meat was significantly associated with longer telomere length. I mean, that is incredible. You know, so I'm going to pop the links for all of these in the comments below. But I mean, that comes back exactly to what this report on their diet is saying. So it clearly states increase in DHEAS and telomere length, which we now know is directly correlated with animal proteins. And it even says that the diet contains animal protein. So, I mean, you know, what's that? Is that location 3 or 4? I'm losing
count. That's number 4, that is.
Because we're ticking these off so incredibly quickly. But it's shocking, isn't it? It's incredibly shocking.
So it is.
I've left this one to last because for me, this is the most striking. Mm. But Okinawa is one that's often touted as being, you know, having one of the biggest or longest living lifespans in the world and having a heavily, if not purely, vegan or vegetarian based lifestyle. And I think what we're going to show people in this is going to shock many people. But what have you got to throw to us in regards to Okinawa?
Yeah, so like you said, it's an interesting one. It's very manipulated, this one. So I think they try and portray that the majority of their diet is sweet potato and not that much else. But the data that shows that is just after the Second World War had finished and they'd been decimated. So that they've always had huge amounts of pigs. You know, pork's one of the things that they have. They cook everything with lard. And after the Second World War, it was decimated. And in order to survive, they were eating a lot of sweet potato. And that's when they happened to be there getting data. And that's what he used. That's like I say with that Dan Butner. He didn't go and visit these places and say, what are you eating now? He just looked at historical stuff. Oh, okay. It said when someone went there in the 60s, they were eating sweet potato. So we'll put that down. So he's cherry picked data that suits his story and he's gone with it. So yeah, that's why people say they eat loads of sweet potato, but they don't. And pork is, I think, pretty much their main food source. So they cook everything in lard, loads of lard. They all have pigs. They all keep their own pigs. Which is another thing as well, which, you know, I was going to say before about the dairy, where places have dairy and eat lots of dairy, they ferment it in a traditional way before eating it. They're not eating dairy like we have in the Western world. And that's important. And the same with the pigs. In Sardinia as well, they all have pigs. but they're eating their natural diet and they're in the natural environments. They're a lot healthier than the factory farm processed ones that we're getting in certain places. So people have to bear that in mind when they're thinking about it. They might think, oh, pork's unhealthy, but no, it's not. Pork's amazingly healthy, and especially if it's raised in its natural environment with a natural diet.
Yeah, spot on. I completely agree. I don't buy. I have occasionally, but I mean, I buy most of my meat now, if not now all of it. I mean, I have bought shop-bought meat. But again, as you learn more on this lifestyle, you know, you understand the environmental impacts and the health impacts. I'm not saying these things don't go on. And these vegan programs that are aired and make it look like we are, and you know, animals killing these animals. And it is, you know, it is quite distressing, but I don't support that way of animal farming anyway. I don't support caged animals, the cows and the lambs and the sheep. Because I'm into mutton lately.
Okay.
Which is harder to come by, but it's doesn't taste as nice as lamb. But again, look, I'm a lover of animals. I would rather eat an old sheep than a young one, you know. So I am trying always to make these better steps, but it's a lot harder and it's way more expensive. Surprisingly, you'd think it'd be cheaper.
Yeah.
But the pigs on the farm, they're fed all the scraps of all the veg and things. So they're not grain fed. And they're incredibly well looked after. They're not injected with nasty antibiotics. And they're treated incredibly well. You know, I've been to these farms, and anybody who is serious about animal welfare, all you need to do is go to a local English or Welsh farm, and you will see, you know, how well these animals are cared for. I don't buy supermarket meats because, you know, the animals may be caged. They may be grain fed, but the local farmer, why would he pay for grain when he's got a field full of grass for free? It doesn't make sense, does it? And I know this is different when we go to America because, you know, they are predominantly grain fed there. You know, and a lot of the grain that's grown in the world, the vegans would argue that it's used for feed for you know, caged animals. But again, this is where, you know, I think vegans and our community, we have the same things in mind. When I look at why a vegan becomes a vegan, it's for three things. One is animal cruelty. The other is environmental impact. And the other would be nutrient density. And this is exactly why I'm carnivore. You know, I care about all of those things, but my research has shown me that there's less, in fact, it's not just less damage to the environment. The carbon is sequestered through regenerative farming techniques. And studies have shown this. And I did a podcast recently with Stephen Thomas, and we went through all the data. Regenerative farming techniques sequester carbon. So they're actually carbon negative. It's not like burning fossil fuels, because new carbon is created from burning these fossil fuels and new carbon is put into the atmosphere. But when we use a regenerative farming technique, the cows eat the grass, you know, they poop it out and methane comes out and that goes into the atmosphere, turns into carbon dioxide. And then the plants use that for photosynthesis.
Photosynthesis, yeah.
Yeah. And then the cows eat the plants and then it comes back out again and that feeds the microbes in the ground, which allows the grass to grow, which the cows eat. And it's just this continuous cycle. No new carbon is created. And that's the difference between burning fossil fuels compared to using a regenerative farming technique. And this is why I support local butchers and local farms. The butcher that I buy, you know, my week's supply of food from is less than a mile away. And their farm, because they own their farm, is probably 5 minutes down the road again. So within 6 miles, you know, my food is living happily and is, you know, has a very good life, looked after incredibly well, and then doesn't travel very far, and a lot less damage to the environment to me and to the animal is caused. It's way less that, you know, if I was to live a strict lion diet, that one animal is enough to feed me for a year, in over a year. If you lived a slightly less strict lifestyle, then, you know, that may be three or four. But even the strictest vegan, the food produced with them, looking at the best evidence in their favor, is 21 times higher
you know, and that's quite astonishing. So yeah, I think we're all in this for the same reason, but the middle ground, you know, that is where I think we need to target our efforts rather than fighting against each other. I posted this podcast recently and all I've had is abuse from the vegan community. And it's like, look, I've put this out there. Just listen to the evidence. Go away and research it. Don't just dismiss it. You know, if you find holes in it, by all means, come back and tell me and I'll look into it again. But just look at the data, take a step back and think, you know, question things. Have you got this right? You know, is there any truth? And I encourage that. I don't want you to take my word for it. I want you to go away and think about that information. And that is the start, I think, of how things can improve. Most carnivores I know were once vegan. They've gone down that rabbit hole. They were this person. And then somebody showed them a piece of information. And that was the catalyst that began them on their journey in regards to looking into the truth behind these things. But as you say, pork is highly nutrient dense. Yes, farmed pork, maybe not so much. But pork is, in fact, I mean, lard is one of the things that is known to reduce deuterium within the body. Lard, when tested compared to olive oil, is like 3 times less oxidative than olive oil, which is astonishing, really. You know, it's saturated fats. And it gets better again, isn't it? You know, butter, tallow, lard, ghee. But the lard itself is still incredibly healthy, yet we're told the opposite. I'm going to share this now in regards to what you've just said. So this is research done on the elderly Japanese. Nutrient intake of 94 Japanese centenarians investigated between 1972 and 73 showed a higher proportion of animal protein to total protein. I don't know what else to say. I mean, that's all you need to say. High intakes of milks and fats and oils have been favorable on tenure. It also goes on to say the proportion of energy from proteins and fats were significantly higher in the former than the latter. And part of this study goes on, and this isn't in there because this is just the abstract from the study, but I'm going to read this because this is from the study itself. So the food intake in Okinawa has been different from other regions in Japan. The people there have never been influenced by Buddhism. Hence, there has never been taboo regarding eating habits. Eating meat was not stigmatized, and consumption of pork and goat was historically high. The intake of meat was higher in Okinawa. And this was in the results, which they went on to say was unexpected. We did not find, and this is astonishing. The researchers of the study concluded was, unexpectedly, we did not find any vegetarian among the centenarians. You know, and that is brutal, isn't it? And as you rightly say, let me go on to the next one. So we'll take a look at this. So what this shows is exactly what you said. According to the Okinawan government records, the pig population dropped from more than 100,000 pigs before the war to a little under 800. And that's where they all went. I mean, as you say, the war came around, there was a lot of famine and they were consuming these foods. And this is where the data was taken from. And it also goes on to say that traditionally pre-World War II, the Okinawa diet consisted of everyday diet and a festival diet. And basically what the research concluded, that they based it on the everyday diet, which makes it sound like, all right, okay, well, you know, the festival diet isn't very common. But the festival diet, which was incredibly high in pork and goat, made up 120 days of the year. You know, that's 1 in 3 days of feasting on animal proteins, which would be more than enough to carry you through, 2 to 3 days. And as we know, you know, historically, they consumed lots of pig, lots of pork, and the fat from within. And there it is. I mean, I don't know what more we can add to this, but what I would add also, and I've made a note of this, is that Hong Kong also has one of the highest life expectancies in the world. This didn't make the paper. This didn't make Dan Butner's research because they are known for being one of the top contributors, one of the top three countries to consume meat per person within the world. So there are other locations out there that have high levels of centenarians that did not make the publication, or, you know, the one of these five or six or seven countries, and the number is growing. But I mean, that's quite compelling data, isn't it? You know, It's there in black and white, study after study. I don't know what we can add to that, but I mean, that's pretty strong stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just for people who want to look more into it, go and listen to or read or watch people who actually go there, because all of this stuff, or you know, the whole Blue Zones diet and, you know, the Blue Zones paper, it's all just based on data and questionnaires. It's not, they've not been there. They've not lived with them. They've not seen what the traditional diet is. They've not talked to them about how has your country, or, you know, your people, how have you ate over the last 100 or so years? How did your grandparents eat? They don't ask them that. And as soon as anyone goes there, spends any amount of time with them, animal foods are everywhere. You know, yeah, they all eat some plants as well, but they prepare them in certain ways, like with the dairy as well. But they're all animal-based, and then they have other things on top of it. It's the opposite of plant-based.
Yeah. And again, I know it comes back to what you alluded to earlier, isn't it? There's a lot of other contributing factors. You know, there's less stress. There's a good community network. You know, if I begin walking every day, then I'm more careful in regards to the food I eat. I stop eating processed foods. I stop drinking alcohol. I stop smoking. And then maybe I begin running. And then, yes, I may be eating more plants, but now I'm not eating the fast food and the chocolates and all of the you know, those toxic compounds that are found in the supermarket in shiny packets, you know, the seed oils. And if memory serves, aren't most of the locations, if not all of them, around the equator? Are they all in?
Yeah. They've all got, very favorable latitudes. Yeah. Which again is a big thing that plays into it. The amount of sunlight and you're getting, it's all part of it. Yeah.
Definite. I mean, vitamin D gets, you know, all of the airtime. Vitamin D is important. It is important for producing testosterone. But when we look at the UVA rays, cholesterol creates vitamin D to act as a sunscreen to help protect us from the sun. But when the UVA touches the skin, it increases nitric oxide, which is a potent vasodilator, and that is directly linked to longevity. So when you have more access to UVA, which is typically early in the day or later in the evening when the sun is the lowest in the sky, that's been proven, you know, beyond doubt to increase longevity. There are other ways. Living a ketogenic carnivore lifestyle also increases nitric oxide. there's a shock. But when you have access to light like this, and, you know, the circadian rhythm is where it should be, and you're eating animal proteins, because animal proteins are a contributor to making vitamin D. You cannot make vitamin D from plants, but animal proteins contain vitamin D. So living along the equator with, as you say, favorable light time is going to increase not only vitamin D, but nitric oxide, and the protein from within is also going to do so.
Yeah, no, I think we covered it all. And there's another thing to take into account with the Blue Zones is they don't have radiation. You know, they haven't got EMF radiation. That most of them haven't got mobile phones. They've not got all the medications that we have. They're not being plied with antibiotics and regular medications. They're not on pain medication every day. And all of these things count as well. They have that relaxed life. So yeah, I encourage people, like you said, to look into it and do your own research with it.
Definitely. And I think as you say that, something else just came to mind, that generally I think most of these locations are away from, you know, the big city life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, they're in locations that have much less stress in regards to work stresses and life stresses. And that is a massive contributing factor to longevity. You know, this constant state of being stressed has been shown to be a big killer. So, you know, if you want to be fit and healthy, move to one of these locations, but you will be eating animal proteins.
Absolutely.
Ryan, brilliant chatting, my man. Where can people find you?
So the easiest place would be my website, which is healthwealthuk.com. I'm also on all social medias as Ryan Health Wealth, and the podcast is HW Pod. UK. That'd be the easiest.
Fantastic. And I look forward to you releasing that that new one with your Greek friend.
Yes.
Right. Been an absolute pleasure, my man. Take care. And I will speak to you soon.
Thank you for having me.